Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
And thank you, everyone. This is Andrew Fetter. Welcome to When Pigs Fly. And I also thank BBS Radio for having me on every Friday for some, what, 6-7 years now? I'm losing count. I guess it's been a long, long time on this trail. A lot of things are happening, but first I want to, before I get into some other specifics that lately have come up, specifically I know everybody's watching what's going on over in the Middle East and North Africa and stuff. We recently, you know, of course, 9/11 has passed and gone and such. So in this situation, I'd like to give a brief moment of silence, or silent prayer. First, my thoughts and prayers to all souls who died on or due to 9/11, and to all families, lovers, friends who were directly or and indirectly affected. God bless them all. And a moment of silence, please. Thank you. I think before I cut on, somebody asked me, we were talking briefly, I guess people, ironically, about 9/11, and ironically, of course, all the stuff started happening over in the Middle East. And I will get into the specifics of the show, and I have a special announcement. But a lot of things that happen in around the world, and we take things in a pattern of thinking, looking things within our own fishbowl effects, or like our own illusion of humanity, so to speak. Specifically, how we live on Earth as human beings. And the problem is, oftentimes we look at things for our own suffering, our own pains, and calamities that happen around us and around the world and situations. But in retrospect, when people look in the reality of who, what we are, and specifically how we can reach a greater harmony, of course, you can just look into the Middle East, as I have often said, or even including North Africa or at all, as the epitome for everything that is wrong in humanity. And you have a good picture. Look at it, the camera, and you watch it. It is showing you exactly what is wrong with humanity. Here are peoples around the world. I don't care what you want to say about a film or whatever it is, whether you like it or not. Getting over said of killing or maiming and destroying all over my God is better than your God kind of thing, or the invention of the lie kind of bullshit. When in real reality, when there's a massive earthquake hits and it wipes out, let's say, a whole broad case of people, whether in the Middle East or wherever, or a hurricane or a tornado or even a volcano or any kind of calamity, it draws in the reality of who we are. The earth does not say, oh, whether you're a Jew, Christian, Arab, black, white, or whatever. When a city is wiped out by a hurricane or a tornado or a volcano, a meteor crashes and kills. When disease and pestilence hits broad areas, it doesn't select, oh, this is a white person, a black person, Mexican, Chinese, Japanese, Arab, Jew, Iranian, British, French. It doesn't matter. That's all in our own imaginary processes. That ain't the reality. Thomas Paine had once said, all national institutions of churches, being them religion, whether Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, appear to me no other than human inventions set up to terrify and enslave mankind and monopolize power and profit. And any system of religion that has in it that shocks the mind of a child cannot be true. Next week, I will broadcast straight up free speech and all its endeavors and the importance of free speech in its absolutism. People in Egypt and those who are listening in the Middle East, free speech is an underlying principle for true democracy. Egypt has demonstrated they are nothing more than rule of mob or mob rule with a theocracy. It has demonstrated that there's no tolerance for minority religions. Jews have not been allowed to do their services on high holidays. Coptic Christians are still being ostracized and attacked, as well as Jews. And yet, even within their own denial, and this is a fact, read it, in the Quran, in the Surah 4:24, it stipulates how Muhammad committed rape and encouraged rape of non-Muslims. Muhammad was a pedophile. He married a 9-year-old girl named Aisha. There's no denying that. That's a fact. Muhammad was a murderer and committed genocide. Hardly a man of peace. Certainly not a man of love. He certainly was not a Buddha or a Jesus. In Hijrah, year 5, talking the Muslim era, 627 AD, almost 900 Jews of Medinan tribe called Banu Qurayza were massacred in one day by Muhammad and his followers. The Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, was the lead specter of the greatest, one of the greatest butcheries that crossed that area, which began his earlier day on that night, and in one day killed, like I said, almost 900 Jews. And the remainder that escaped the death were captured by the Muslims, sold as slaves. His commission of genocide is well documented, far from being a religion of peace. I'm not saying even the Jews have had their past with their history, and I'm not saying the Christians either. That has been the problem, not the solution. Again, what you see in the Middle East is simply barbaric. Who cares what the fuck a film said? Who cares what drawn a little image? If it was truly an enlightened ideology, it would be able to handle any criticisms, any things of negativity brought toward it. If it was a beacon of light, light transcends over darkness, not the other way around. Light, in its own essence, its own brilliance, its own wisdom, has a fortitude to repel any darkness. But darkness, you see, has a problem when light is projected upon it. That is what you see in the Middle East. When light is projected toward a negative ideology, it reacts negatively. It's very simple. I will not go further on this, but I will just state what I felt was in kind for these times. And also, as an underlying thought, I want people out there to look at the circumstances of what's happening over there as possibly, put this in quotes, possibly, a diversion from what really is the problem. And who possibly had created and implemented this. Perhaps it was a special group of people who sit in a crown in a place called a London. Who knows? Perhaps. That's all I have to say. Now, I also want to let everyone know I have a special announcement. I need a couple of little horns here. I have a doing practical Kabbalah, the understanding of numbers and the essence of the letters, and of course, you. I'm having a special class on Saturday. If you are in the Ventura area, Los Angeles area, please do come. It will be on a Saturday, September 29th. It's going to be in Ojai, Ventura. Again, it's Saturday, September 29th, and it's going to be at 1 p.m. at Soul Center Shop, 311 North Montgomery Street, Ojai, California, 93023. The number there is 805-640-8222. And again, that's going to be from 1 p.m. through 3 p.m. I'll be doing a special class about numbers and the essence of them in the Kabbalist understanding. Again, that's September 29th. See you there. Now, the same day, we're having a psychic fair, and I've been honored to ask to come back again. So I'll be doing, besides doing my class the same day, which of course is between 1 and 3, I will be doing readings from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. So I look forward to seeing everybody out there. Thank you. Now, also, because I'm another announcer, I know next week, I believe, is going to be the Jewish New Year. So in doing so, I wish for those who celebrate the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, a very happy New Year, or Lashana Tova. Now, most people ask me, I've had in recent events, some emails and things like that, asking me about readings and astrology. And since I've been doing that as of late for last year, and asked me if when I had I have a special guest, Carrie Fezza. And by the way, she's not coming on this month. I'm going to be, hopefully we'll be having her on in October prior to elections, because she's going to give me her astral analysis of both Romney and Barack Obama. That should be pretty interesting. It's going to be a special, and I'll give you the announcement of the dates and when that will happen. And I'm also setting up a schedule of some special guests that will be coming on through the October and November range. Anyway, now astrology. Astrology was, in reality, was actually implemented, if you look back in history, was actually to help out with harvesting. It was both the implementation. In the Middle East, for example, there was actually three climates, basically. There's three seasons in their, within their climate. So you'll see it was broken up three. In fact, actually, you'll see astrology written in a Kabbalist book that was written well over some 5,000 years called the Sefer Raziel. And it talks about breaking, and it breaks up the zodiac within those three pieces. And I know the Sumerians used it, obviously, way back when, of course. And I'm talking about Western astrology, of course. Chinese astrology utilizes the system of animals. And even so, whether it's Chinese astrology or Western astrology, what is it really? It's basically sort of like a weather report. And what happened was back in the day when it becoming from utilizing for systems of analysis for the harvest and things like that, and for handling our cultural means than it was applied toward the kings and queens, and they utilized it toward their strategic affairs and to wars and things. So they started planning a course based upon the astrology because there was a different influence. So let me explain here. Astrology is like basically like the climate. It's like, let's say, you know, it's starting to get hot that day. It's summertime, so it's hot, right? So it has those energy elements. People ask, why is it retrograde? Why is this season, that season, during Leo? And I don't know all the aspects, get detailed. I'm not an astrologist. But it basically is a weather report. But people take it too much for granted as absolutism when, again, it is a weather report. When they talk about what, oh, this guy has, this is an Aries or this is a Gemini. Oh, but there's other things applied to in your chart and there's generalities. We often broad stroke it. So the personalities of people are sometimes thrown out there because, look, at we choose and pick our lives. So in essence, you're picking the essence of, let's say, I'm an Aries. You pick the essence of a sun sign Aries. So it's really to get you to learn to do the things opposite or to better yourself. For example, Aries tend to be less patient. So what that means, you have to be more patient. For, let's say, Leo might be a little bit more egotistical, so it'd be less egotistical, right? If it was, let's say, Gemini, sometimes it goes back and forth and not knowing, you know, going from one direction to another, or actually Libra, I apologize, making decisions, learning to be focused on making decisions and being opposite, less being worrying about what you look like, being less working off your alter ego, less worrying about what things look on the outside, more important what's in the inside. So it's usually like the opposite. Scorpio, for example, instead of being manipulative on the lower end, tries to become more like the ego, the more of the higher end, the spiritual deepness. So you see, or everyone, I'm being in general, but they have, it's basically a weather report, plus when it comes to your person, it's more or less dealing with what aspects you need to adjust the opposite. It's like your job to try to learn to do things, to develop yourself. Because we are essentially trying in our bodies to experience and help developing ourselves. Now, when it comes to readings, this is pretty interesting because, I mean, I've had most time I have readings with people, they ask the most three fundamental things. What do you go to get a reading for? Most will say romance or wealth, work, finance, or health. That's generally most. Some people might say, oh, what about my friend, my relationship with my buddies, you know, things like that. There might be other extremes. But it's romance, and there might be, like I said, I mean, there's I have ones with divorces and corporations, and but so they sort of collage together sometimes. But that's basically what people look into. And so what is the important aspects of being readings? See, most people take the readings for, like, granted, for, like, the things that aren't. And literally, what is a reading? Reading is anybody reading. It's basically based upon a reading of somebody makes a choice. You decide, let's say, there's a door. And you made that door. Now you're walking through that door. And that door has a little walkway. Let's say call it a street. So you have a path, a direction. So when somebody reads, and I'm not talking about interpretative things, I'm talking real readings, they will read somebody's essence where they're heading in a direction. And there's all kinds of readings that people might see. You might, I'm more clairaudient, clairvoyant, so I'll see images or be told things, and I'll be hearing maybe from guide energies or actually seeing it or hearing it or visualizing, and I just go, okay, this is what it is. And I don't want to try to imprint it. Well, maybe that means this. I let the person who I'm doing the reading for put their interpretations, why that is or what it is. And I may even ask them questions. Do you have who, there's a blonde woman standing next to you. She's this and this and this, and she's holding this behind you, and it's at work, and there's people, and I don't know what that means. So I ask them, and they go, oh, I know who that is. Okay, and then I go, okay, because I'm, and you tap in, for example, me, tapping into their energy, sourcing it, and what it is, and or it goes in further. Let's say somebody wants to know a particular situation. They want to know, okay, I'm looking for, in fact, I had a client who goes, came in the other day and asked me, I don't know, can you tell me what I should be doing as far as a job? And I'm like, wow, I'm supposed to advise you on you making a choice. So I said, well, let's put it this way, what do you want to do? And the person goes, well, I like to do this and this and this. So then I said, okay, let's look at the aspect. If you were to choose this job, element of world path, or this world path, or this world path, then I can tell you, we'll go look at what happens down the road. But I cannot make the choice for you one way or the other. You have to make the choice. So the person gave me a broad area. They still didn't know. So some things came out three, and it was still in general aspects. So if you're giving something, ask something in general, don't be surprised if you get a general thing. But then don't be surprised if you ask something specific and you get something that's sort of broad information and is not detailed enough, because basically sometimes the detail of it has to come from your end. And sometimes, I hate to tell you, I'm honestly, some things I may know, but I'm told not to let the person know. And I'm sorry, but that's, sometimes we cannot, it's not good if somebody's, if you're diverting somebody's karma experience. I'm not saying something really negative. I'm saying, you know, if, like example, somebody wants to go and meet somebody, and I'm in love with her, blah, 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 I got to be with her, blah, blah, blah. And you see, well, you know, it is what it is. I see them, there's energy there, there's romance energy, what's going to happen. But I see at the end that it's not going to live long. So I will usually tell the person, if I see something like that, I won't tell them, oh, it's going to be not the relationship. I just says, hey, go with the flow and enjoy it. Don't place expectations, which you should do anyway. Maybe it will change. Maybe at this moment of time it changes. And by the way, that's another thing. When people do readings, it's based upon at that moment of time. Anything can change. The instance we walk out the door, based upon choices, and choices also our thoughts, that changes it. So when people come back, they go, well, how come I got a second reading was suddenly different? Because you made changes of your choices at that moment. And everybody's, nobody's God. Nobody can walk on the water here. So readings are for what they are. So take them. It's sort of like a weather report, a path, a beacon, a direction. And that gets in the next aspect, which I try to implement, which is spiritual development. What choice that leads to the best choice to develop a person? Not to make it harder or easier, because it's, if you tell somebody there's a door, and then tell them, hey, there's a door, walk through it, they're walking along, you go, hey, there's a door, walk through the door, and they still walk in, into the wall. That's still their choice, and that maybe that's their only way they can lead. And all you can do is advise them the door. And the minute you go, you get upset about it or anything, that actually you're bringing your own ego into it. So it's a matter of choice that leads into the proper path. So it's important for the spiritual development to allow them to spiritually evolve too. It's also important to, I believe, to when you do readings, is to help develop the person. I find out a lot of people that do come to see me are actually, I think, maybe I'm just feeling lucky or whatever, but I do have a lot of very special clients. I'm actually, most of them, that are basically very evolving very quickly, and they're heading to that path. So a lot of it's more of a spiritual questions, as well as their endeavors and relationships, but sort of a collage. But you're there to help them. Like I have most of the people, let's say, for example, in your relationship, I say, what are you? You're energy. And energy has a frequency. It's everything's really simple. People, like I said, make things more complicated than they are, when in reality they're really, really, really simple. So let's look at it. Let's say you're just energy that has a frequency. And that's like numerology. Let's say you're like a 5 or 14. And let's say it's like in music, you're an A sharp or B sharp or C or flat or whatever. So, but you're still in a manner of a, within music, let's say, of a frequency, you're in a particular octave. And the person you meet, whether it's a love relationship, just a friend or somebody, a coworker or whatever, they have a particular frequency. Well, when it works together is when there's harmony. When you are in the same approximation in the same octave, you have harmony within the tone. But if disharmony occurs when they're so far apart in octaves that it sounds off, like something's way off. Like if you're in a key of E and they're a key of A or vice versa, there's disharmony, right? You're in different octaves. So that's where there's a problem. And then as a different octave, three things occur. A good, healthy relationship with whatever it is will, if let's say I'm talking a romantic relationship, for example, you the couple will generally, through life's circumstances, well, one may go slightly down or up, but they constantly help each other going up, or they go themselves, they each other help move up along the ladder. Like you imagine a ladder, and then on each side of them is this person that's sort of moving up together on opposite sides, but they're generally helping each other up. It's like mutual steps, if you want to call it. Now, when it's unhealthy is when one is, I'd say, a lower frequency and tries to bring the other one down by either through physical or emotional or mental abuse, say things, you know, be ridiculed, make comments. And this, by the way, what I'm talking about also happens generally in society, like what's happening in the Middle East. People are like, want to bring somebody down further by violence. It's your reaction. Remember, it's your reaction that brings which it is. So if somebody acts really bad, negative toward you, and you react toward it negatively, that's bringing your frequency down. That's the whole, what they try to do. Bring them, you know, they'll think, bring you down to the lower level. Drugs can lower your frequency too. So that's another issue, and I've seen that a lot of people go, so I don't know, I'm doing really good, I'm enlightened, but I'm smoking so much pot. And oh, just the other day I snorted some coke, and oh, by the way, and I'm looking at them, okay, well, you know, it's one thing partying, it's one thing you're doing some shit because it really actually messes up your arc field and it lowers your frequency, especially like alcohol. So it does lower your frequency. Now, the other one that I didn't mention, though, that when there's a separation of when it's higher and lower, which is really, really, really common, I see a lot of codependent relationships. And what are codependent relationships? Those are people who are consistently, you know, helping the other person up. Helping that can be either, let's say, they're alcoholics or drugs or whatever. And something, you know, they're constantly pulling them up. And so they're in this illusion. They're in love with the person, but they're really not in love with the person. They're loving the idea of the potentiality of the person. Maybe the person has a lot of abilities and really a good person, possibly could be, but he has drug problems. Or maybe he has an alcoholic or maybe some other thing. So, but that is, so the person's trying to bring them up and they'll go through these relationships for years and years and years, and it's the same old thing. Codependency. And then they're understanding why their life is sluggish and not moving along. Well, try swimming in the swimming pool with a bowling ball. That's basically what that you're doing. If you're in a codependent relationship, I want you to take a bowling ball and put it in your one of your hands and try to swim across your swimming pool, if you have a swimming pool. Don't get to, it's hard to swim like that, right? Well, just imagine that bowling ball is that other person that you're with, that you're being codependent to. Now, if you let go of that swimming ball, what happens to you then? How fast can you swim across the swimming pool? Got my drift? That literally is what I'm talking about. Now, how does this affect your spiritual development? It generally does, because we are simply beings, and our souls, our energy, like I said, our frequency, and we either try to increase our frequency or it's being lowered. And increasing our frequency is actually what we call the awakened stage, as we become more awakened, our perception increases because of frequency increases, become more adept in knowing or understanding of who we are at that given moment of time, because we're nothing, we're a verb basically. So we're getting a better understanding of ourselves and our universe around us. We're knowing our true nature, our true selves, as opposed to the alter ego of ourselves. So that's increasing our frequency. And if you, of course, lower your frequency, the other way around. That is part of the spiritual development. And you don't have to do kumbaya. I mean, you don't have to sit there meditate or anything. Sometimes called a living meditation or being, just being. Living meditation is like just being, doing the work that you do. Like if you do things to help people other than yourself, that's called doing merit acts. That's also changing things. When you can do things in artistically a creative moment that gets you to the place of moment, that's also important. We often say there's past, present, future. Past, you learn from the past, you have a direction in the future, and you try to live in the moment. Unfortunately, in our society, we worry about our past. Oh my God, what happened? Da 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 da, you know, or the volume, whatever. And then in the future, we have a lot of fear patterns. Or, oh my God, anxiety, am I going to have my job, economics, I'm going to pay for the bills, I'm going to feed my kids, I'm going to put them in college. So we have that fear base of future. So, and we're never in the moment. So we oftentimes, our days go by and all we are doing is working. We're like little hamsters on the wheel instead of being in the moment. So the creative side of us allows it. So our being in the moment can be done through meditation. It can also be done, by the way, which nobody really talks about, not just meditation. You can do stuff creatively. It's cool that, you know, you don't have to sit there and go and go into a place of non-thought. You can actually do that by actually doing things that are creative. For example, if you're painting or you're drawing or you're writing music or playing anything creative, writing anything, because you're actually heading toward that place of non-thought. That's the whole point where thoughts leave and true wisdom comes in. That's the place you go to a place of non-thought. So that's the area. And of course you always, at that moment, when you do a lot of that, you of course keep yourself grounded. Now, here's where I know I got to say stuff, certain things. This has to do with reading versus interpretation. I mean, I might be sitting around. We actually, they sometimes stick us in little rooms, and you have one room next to another room. And here, I unfortunately hear other people doing readings. And sometimes I'll have to roll my eyes sometimes. I go, oh, my God. Because sometimes things are being interpreted as opposed to reading. Now, this is where it comes tarot. If somebody puts a card down and it has symbols on it, and you're putting that and you're interpreting that information, deploying, it's not not a reading. It's a reading. It's more of an interpretation of the cards. Reading means psychic reading means to read off your energy, read off a clairvoyance. Where is the clairvoyance? Where is the clairaudience? Where is the clairsentience if you're reading from a fucking card? Nada. Even if I threw I Ching, that's not a reading, it's an interpretation. I take these things, has a passage, I take the interpretation based upon that and tell you what I think it is. That is interpretation. That is not reading. That is not psychic reading. That is a tarot interpretation. Anytime somebody gives a season information, let's say I see, oh, there's a couch, a white couch. Okay, you saw a white couch. What does that mean? What is that? All I saw was a white couch. Now, if I start going, hey, the white couch has a symbolic meaning da-da-da-da-da, that's what it is. Now, here's an example. People ask me, can you give me dreams? Yes, I do dream interpretations. So somebody tells me the dream, and I interpret what it is. I'm not reading what is, but I see, let's say, sometimes they have, they're reading, their dreams might be actually going a future state, and some might be, I believe, maybe symbols. So I interpret based upon the symbolization and give an interpretation. This is the same interpretation that somebody has tarot. This is the same interpretation somebody says I Ching. This is the same interpretation if I throw a little pendulum. Everything, you know, is based upon that. That is interpretation. So if you ever go get a tarot reading, it's not a reading. It's correctly a tarot interpretation. It is not psychic reading. If you go through somebody and they lay out tarot cards, it is no longer then, unless if they start reading symbols, this means this, and this means this, and this means this, they're now interpretation. Now, I have cards called soul cards, but I don't read the cards. I see images, but they're just where I see reflections of things I see. And usually when I'm knowing music, when I'm talking to somebody on the phone or reading on the phone, but when I have people in front of me, I'll start putting them on, and it's sort of like just flipping. Actually, I'm just going through the motions of reading what I'm seeing. And then when they put them out, they're conversing what I actually do see in the first place. And oftentimes I'll set patterns up and I'll show the person, and it sort of just comes out like that. And I go, see, this is where like you and this is like me, the situation here. So I start visually, and I try to show them what I see, because it's hard to get somebody in my brain to see what they see in the cards, show them what I see. Because they're like artistical drawings. So that's the difference. So if you do go get a reading, that's a psychic reading. And then there's a tarot interpretation. Reading versus interpretation. Big difference. Now, what is the problem with interpretation? Even remember I just said to you, dreams. The dreams I'm interpreting is based upon my perspective of what I think. Is there a reading? Is I just see the info and I don't know what it is, and here it is. I'm not interpreting. There's no perception in it. It's just what I see. It's just here. I don't know. This is it. I don't know what it means. Here. That's reading. Interpretation is, oh, this means this, this means that, this could mean this, that could mean that. Difference, right? Just so you know, you can always, not bagging on it, but you can always, if you want to have interpretations, it's fine too. I mean, dream interpretation, tarot interpretation, but it is not a reading. It is an interpretation. The problem is, reason why when people put tarot cards and they try to do their so-called reading on themselves and they have problems, it's like trying to interpret for yourself. So they want somebody from outside to interpret the thing and give their perspective. Get it? They need an outside perspective. That's why they say they can't read their own tarot, because it's a perception. Now, karma versus free will. This comes to issue when you're doing like things of elements of reading and stuff like that. People go, wait a second. Is this destined? You see in the image, is it supposed to happen? Or is it free will? And this comes into being where the collage, people manifest certain situations that occur in the future. So like when I'll have people do a circumstance so I can see what they're manifesting. Because sometimes when people manifest, they're creating what is about to happen in their own free will. So there's free will versus karma. This is like gravity versus what we call, often called in physics, dark energy, the opposite of gravity. It is like the yin and yang. They sort of work together. Karma and free will interact. This is what is called co-creation. The karma is the reaction intertwined with the karma, experience, and the free will is your choice of that experience of karma. When you choose to be in your body, you chose it. When I said, like my great teacher once said, Jenny Sinclair, there's no such thing as victims, we are all volunteers, that is absolutely correct. Every experience you volunteered and made a choice in the spiritual context, which is the spiritual reality, which is the reality of all things, you chose it. But there is co-creation. So you chose to walk down this path, and there's a karmic response to it. So then there comes the question of what are karmic weeds and flowers and seeds, and who's to say if it's karma or free will, you, the universe, or none of the above. That is the greatest thing. Okay. Some saying this is true. You post that you have a garden, let's say a sand or dirt, and you're supposed to be a cultivator. You're supposed to remove these weeds out, which are your karma, right? But where do the weeds come from? They're like the little seeds, right? So the little seeds of karma, and you have thousands upon thousands, they constantly create, because for every action you create a new karma of a situation. So how do you remove all the karmic elements? That's the greater question. You go through them by experiencing them, right? You have to remove them, and so they'll push up and they keep on experiencing. You keep on experiencing them until you remove them out there. And all you do what they call cultivating, giving air to it, and that removes them faster and faster. Or you do the other way, which is another way we talk about. I've talked in the past about doing merit or meritous acts helps remove the karma, or reverse. So essentially, like season, it can be a flower, even a pretty flower can be, there's karma, good karma, bad is just still karma. But where does it start from free will? And where is it karma? They're sort of interrelated. You've made choice. Some things are destined. I might post, when some people go, wow, I'm supposed to suffer and go through all this crap. Yeah, you chose it. Ultimately, you chose your life. Ultimately, you made the path. How it works with the universe, it's the universe provides a mechanism. That's what God is. We are all God. It's like a machine that constantly works, and we choose. And there is, as we make the choice, there's a reaction from the universe. When we make a choice, we're constantly moving. We're constantly making choices. Every single thought, even not thinking, is a choice. Even choosing not to choose is a choice. It creates a karmic experience. In this physical realm, which there's two lower realms, there is both a yin-yang, a proactive and reactive. They're cause and effect in these lower areas. Because if you go toward nothingness, there is none, right? Nothing is nothing. How can you have reaction in nothingness? That's the very higher end. That's what they mean in Kabbalism. They say Ein Sof, which is the nothingness, or Tao, that's simply the Tao, the empty bowl, the nothingness. Perhaps the Zen. Nothingness. That is God. The direction toward God. Or the godliness, if you want to call it more correct. So who's to say what is free will and karma and free will? So a greater understanding of this, would possibly have mentioned this in the past, is perhaps sometimes we are nothing more, we get up and we need to stand back and get out of the fishbowl effect. And I've said this also in past shows for years. We tend to live ourselves in a fishbowl. And if I tell my clients, you know, stand back and look outside. That's why they come to see me or whoever, someone who gives a reading, to allow them to see with their own eyes, step out of the fishbowl and look at me, Andrew Fetter, my life. That's what somebody should do. And that gives you the spiritual guidance. That should be what a reading is. Stand out. This is why I try to even look at humanity. Look what's happening in the Middle East. Stand out of that. Don't be amongst the bullshit. And look at it from outside. Imagine stuff. Apologize, sir. Imagine you are an alien and you come to visit Earth and you see humans for the first time. That's stepping out of the fishbowl. Observing yourself and what your actions, your behavior, and what you're doing in your thought processes. That's stepping out of the fishbowl. Stepping out of the fishbowl, out of the drama happening in your relationships. Stepping out of the fishbowl of what's going on in your economics. Stepping out of the fishbowl of what you are as a human being in this temporary brain. Because in reality, what are we? Are we human beings having a spiritual experience? Or are we in truth? In truth, are we spiritual beings having a human experience? It's the latter. And what is that human experience? It's what we're doing. Our day-to-day activities. Our reaction to things. See, oftentimes when I do even readings, I talk first from a spiritual, because that's the reality, and then goes mental, then physical. So I tell in a broader area, when people say, oh, can you do a general like reading or whatever? General reading would be a spiritual overview of your spiritual context, which goes down and then it relates into different areas aspects, even though it's sort of broad. It generally affects you in multiple areas in your human being that's having your spirit in that human experience. If I took your body away from you, your human body, what would you be left? A spirit, right? So it's a spirit that's in you having human experience. Here comes where the reality is of suffering. Why there's no such thing as really suffering. It is a perception. In reality, it is a human experience, not a spiritual situation. Why? Let's say you're suffering from pain. You have pain on your leg. How would you know you're suffering from the pain in your leg? Because the nerves, the physical nerves, is feeling the pain. Let's say it was numbed and you didn't feel that pain. Now kind of experience you having. You don't feel the suffering. So how would you know there's no suffering? It's because of your perception of senses. Your senses give you the thinking that it's your suffering. But if you were numbed and you had anesthesia, you would never know that you're having pain. Now, would you? Would you be suffering? No. Because you're not feeling it. This is where I have issues when people talk about feeling of suffering of other animals and things. The whole other thing is seeing somebody going through the perception of pain and going through this perception of suffering is through the understandings of like Buddhism of compassion or Taoism compassion or same thing in real Christianity and real Judaism and real Islam. The compassion is the being empathetic. The whole point of that is why you're supposed to be empathetic. Why are you supposed to be compassionate? I said this multiple times as well before, but it's the vehicle to get to realization that we are all deeply connected to one another. It is a vehicle to get to understand that we are all deeply connected to each other. That is what compassion is. When you see somebody suffering and you see them and you feel, oh my God, look what they're going through. You're feeling the connection. because now you're having true realization of truth. And we are all connected. It's not the point of eating whether you're vegetarian or not. Because I can go further. Oh, wait, I don't eat because I don't want the animals to suffer. What about the plant that you eat? Do you not think the plant then suffers? In its perspective, you're biting down on itself and eating away. Why? Because you don't see nerves? It is suffering too. And everybody's perception of suffering is different. And what you term as animal or non-animal or plant or vegetable, that becomes very, can become very, because we're using names, the nomenclature and things to outlay what we believe things are, when in truth of the matter, we're just applying what we think are. Like animals, we categorize, okay, you're hairy, you look this, you're a mammal, you're a reptilian, you know, but you can go further on all living creatures and going, well, where's plant to animal? And I can even go further, what is live and not live, just by talking of viruses and viroids, based upon definitions, because all our things are based upon definitions, and our definitions are based upon diluted information, because when we do definitions, we're making squares, not circles. In the reality of all things, the universe is circle, not squares. But we use squares to apply to our universe, but our universe is circle. So see how logical that is? The spirit itself is circle. The human experience is square. Remember one person a long time ago told me, and I always use this now, it's sort of funny how you meet somebody, they give you, everybody's their own teacher. Teach us, we all have our teachers. We teach you, you teach me. Even people that you don't think are teaching, they're teaching you. Because we're constantly learning and learning things. We're also learning not to learn. But I mean, a circle, once somebody said, a circle is like the universe, and the square within the, you know, like Chinese, you've probably seen the Chinese I Ching coin. And somebody once said, is it the spirit, like I just said here, about the human beings having a spiritual experience, or are we spiritual beings having a human experience? This relates to the square within the circle. Are we squares that happen to have a spirit? Are we perceived beings? Are we having a perceptual situation that happens to have a human, a spiritual essence? In other words, are we personalities that happen to have a spirit? Or is it the other way? Are we our spirits that happen to have a personality? I think logic tells that we are basically spirits that have, in fact, a personality. So I hope this helps for those who don't want to learn about readings, astrology, tarot, and all that at all. I do want to reemphasize again, next week I will be outlaying my free speech and the importance of free speech in every aspect. What is liberty? What is a democracy? What is a republic? What is free thought? What is freedom to believe in what you want to believe? What is free to choose and not to choose? Free speech, free thought, freedom to encumber and choose your path to your greatest happiness, the life pursuit of happiness, as it says. That is next week. And again, for those who will be out in the Ojai area, on the 29th of September. That's a Saturday. Please come at 1 p.m. I will be doing a special class. If you want to know about numbers from a Kabbalistic understanding, practical Kabbalah, the understanding of numbers and the essence of its letters in relation to you. September 29th, 2012, 1 p.m. at Soul Center Shop, 311 North Montgomery Road, Ojai, California. Again, for information, there is you can pre-purchase and you'll save, I guess, $5 they say on the ticket, tickets to come to the class. 805-640-8222. Also on the same day, I will also be doing readings there from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. From what I understand, it's $20 for every 15 minutes. Pretty cheap, pretty reasonable. And with all everybody who are listening to celebrate the Jewish New Year, again, a Rosh Hashanah and a Happy New Year, Lashana Tova. And to my Islamic listeners, I apologize if you felt that I abuse your beliefs, but I tell things how they are. I believe in Sufi Islam, which is the core of all things, which is very is no different than core of Judaism, which is in Kabbalah or Buddhism or esoteric Christianity, shamanism. They're all really the same with different views. We sit on a tree of life. We're all connected. So Allah is you, me, and everything. So don't hate. There's no such thing, hate. If you hate your left hand, you hate Allah. If you attack the left hand, even though you're the right hand, you're still killing Allah. That is truth. That is justice. And I know you're having a special holy days ahead, so God bless you all. Allah be with you. And thank you for all listening. And with that, I wish to close and all y'all. A special thing I've with Ofra Haza. Hope you like this. It's Geladi. Geladi. Hope you like. God bless you all and have a glorious, glorious weekend. Thank you.